We woke up Sunday morning with news of no Lamar Jackson, no Hollywood Brown, no Jimmy Smith, no Brandon Williams, no anybody. And yet, the Ravens persevere with a 16-13 win at Soldier Field against the Bears. Tyler Huntley, a lot of things to talk about and some big news for us to discuss this week on Pod Like a Raven. Yet another just impossible, unlikely, improbable Ravens come from behind win. I'm Antonio Barbera, and I don't know how they keep doing it. They're probably not a very good football team. And yet, 7-3, they are tied for the fewest losses in the AFC, your Baltimore Ravens. And we are here to talk about it. And I'm joined by my co-hosts, starting first with Jace Evans on the West Coast. Jace, I don't know. They might be the worst team in the history of the Ravens franchise. They might be the best team in the history of the Ravens franchise. I do not know what to make of them.
Faith and guts, Antonio. That's how they got this done, according to John Harbaugh. I am 100% with you, though. I don't get it. Every game I watch, I feel like, you know, I'm going to have some nuanced take. Like, yesterday, I was prepared to be like, you know what? This was frustrating, but it's okay. Like, Tyler Huntley played well. It's okay to lose when your quarterback's suddenly out and you don't expect it. And then the final 3 minutes of this game happened, and I'm just flabbergasted, and I'm staring at my screen, and I'm sending a flurry of text messages to various people, including the group chat. This team just leaves me dumbfounded week after week, and you said it. I mean, there's a world where the Ravens are like 2-7, 2-8 right now. Like, they've had two convincing wins all season, but yet here they are, 7 wins, 3 losses, first place in the AFC North. And yeah, I don't get it, but it's been a wild ride and certainly a season to remember. I don't know that it'll end in anything meaningful, but we'll remember the ride. That's for sure.
And joining on the East Coast, Tim Horsey, what do you make of this? Of yet another, I don't know. I'm out of words. I'm out of adjectives to describe this game and this team, Tim. So just the Ravens. What's up?
Well, I am going to steal the thoughts from, and I'm gonna. I hope I don't butcher this name, but Aditi Kinkabwala. She was talking about the Ravens. She's from NFL Network. I'm sure you know CBS Sports. And I'm just going to steal it from her. Stop with the Ravens are lucky BS. And I'm censoring myself here. When you lead your division and have 7 wins, despite nearly having 20 starters and contributors on injured reserve, and pull out a win with a backup quarterback on 2 hours' notice, that's not luck. That's coaching. That's mindset. And it's knowing how to come up with the big play. The Ravens, man, it's the cardiac kids again. I came into this game with no expectation after Tyler Huntley came in. I came in with even less expectation when Andy Dalton came in, which we're going to get to. And they just keep finding ways to entertain us. And boy, what a win that they had to have before this stretch, as we've talked about, you know, many a time here on this podcast.
We are going to get into all that happened in that game and all that happened between maybe the three of us during that game. But first, want to get some big news out for Pod Like a Raven. Happy to announce we are officially, as of a couple days ago, a fan-sided podcast. We will be representing the Baltimore Ravens franchise football club team sport for Fansided, a Minute Media fandom-focused sports lifestyle and entertainment network of more than 300 websites. Make it more than 301, because Pod Like a Raven, officially a Fansided team podcast. And I'm going to turn to my two co-hosts. Guys, it only took us 98 episodes, roughly. But we did it. Good job by us. Tim, very excited to be working with Fansided.
Yeah, absolutely. And the guys over at Ebony Bird as well, who are the Ravens blog there, you're going to be able to find when you read their articles. We will be right there on the front page for you as well, embedded in. And so you can just have if you're one of these people that can multitask and you can read and listen at the same time, better, even better. If not, just download us on your favorite podcast platform. You can listen to us later whenever you'd like. I would do it before the games just to make sure. If you do it after the games, we're probably going to be egregiously wrong about so many things. So you don't want that to happen. But yeah, really, really cool opportunity for us. We appreciate the people over at Fanside for giving us the chance to kind of, you know, voice our opinion to maybe a bit wider of an audience. So still keep telling your friends. Still keep rating, subscribing, reviewing, letting us know. Pod Like Raven on Twitter, Instagram, podlikeraven@gmail.com. But you can also find us now on Fansided, which is great.
And never forget, our grandmothers who were some of our first listeners, the relatives, the friends, you know, you guys made this happen. You're the real heroes as we approach Thanksgiving and give
you
thanks
the real MVP.
For,
you the real MVP.
Yeah, we thank you. Jace, any thoughts on Pod Like a Raven joining with Fans?
Yeah, it's incredibly exciting. It's hard in many ways to believe we've been doing this podcast this long already, but to be able to, yeah, hopefully, you know, just kind of grow this community. I always find it so incredible. Some of the people we hear from on social media, who listen to a podcast, and it's really humbling in that respect. And I hope to hear from more of you all as hopefully we get into more and more of your ear holes. So, it's an incredibly exciting opportunity. And, love talking Ravens. I think about this team about 50% of the time at least, at minimum, when I'm in my waking hours. So, to be able to just kind of share that fandom and love of this team with all of you, looking forward to it.
Tim, you mentioned a minute ago, listen to us, you know, earlier in the week before the games, as opposed to immediately after the games for some takes that may be a little bit stale, such as me picking the Ravens to be 6.5 point at least winners in this game against the Bears with Lamar Jackson at the helm. That was news that changed as the week went along. By Friday, I think it was, started to hear some whispers that he was sick again. All of a sudden he was 50-50 and then inactive as of Sunday morning, but the Ravens with Tyler Huntley persevering, winners 16-13. So let's get into this game now, guys. Offensively, we have to start with the quarterback. We have to start with Huntley. Did just enough to win. I guess he was dying to fumble the ball on every single rollout. He succeeded on one of them. A little bit maybe conservative as an approach with the team to start this game. A lot of runs, even runs on third downs, but then seemed to settle down and open some things up as this game went along and just peaked with that game-winning touchdown drive late in this game. What are your guys' thoughts on Tyler Huntley?
I thought he was serviceable. I mean, it's, again, as I said before, I didn't have any expectation when he got named starter. It was okay. I guess we're just going to give this one to Nagy. That's fine. Whatever. I'm sure the Bears fan will love winning games to keep that man in his job because he's a fan favorite over in Chicago. But there were a lot of good things, and it's good to see a guy that is obviously Lamar Light. You know, he can kind of do some of the same stuff. It's not like for an offense that's pretty specific, and it's not what it used to be, obviously, in years previous. But he can kind of do some of the stuff Lamar does, and it's obviously not comparing the two. I don't think Huntley is anywhere close to the level of his good friend, Lamar Jackson. But he stayed composed the entire time. I mean, one of the things I was impressed with, they went 8-for-17 on third and fourth downs. They had a lot of long third and fourth downs too, which was frankly quite annoying. A lot of third and 11 to third and 12 after, you know, some bad plays on first and second down. And that's one thing that's hampered this offense all year. And the fact that he was able to, you know, it's not 8-for-17 isn't magnificent by any stretch of the imagination, but he was able to keep them in that game. And then, yeah, to have the poise to pull off that drive. Rashad Bateman, by the way, getting real good already at DPI, which I'm a big fan of. Already knows how to get that call, which is going to benefit us for years to come if you didn't watch the Joe Flacco, Torrey Smith offensive heyday that was the Baltimore Ravens. To have that poise after what happened with Andy Dalton, and we'll get to that later, and just the flashbacks and nightmare memories that I kept having over and over and over again. It was really, really encouraging to see, especially we have a quarterback that just loves getting sick. You know, we've got the poop game. I know it wasn't the diarrhea, but come on, we're all calling it the poop game. We've got COVID twice. We've got now this, where he apparently was such a bad chest cold that he couldn't breathe and certain things like that. So, look, it's always going to be a downgrade, but you have a bit more faith in a guy like Huntley now to maybe spot start and step in and get these. It's going to be an ugly game, but maybe pull these victories out when you need to. And I should mention, breaking as we record, Trace McSorley is no longer on this football team. He has just been signed by the Arizona Cardinals. Honestly, I'm kind of happy for him. That's fine. And we can get all this stupid Trace fandom that is nonsense to me out of this Baltimore spotlight here, but or Baltimore area, I should say. But now Huntley is even more of that guy. And I think they made the right call, obviously, when picking the backup in the preseason.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tim, we talked about that in the offseason and how we felt that Huntley should be the guy. And I think, obviously, this game kind of justifies it. It's weird. I thought he played very well for the most part. It's a little strange to say that when you look up and you've scored all of 9 points, but, you know, he put them in a position at that point to still win that game 9-7. But then, as Tim said, just the poise and to lead that drive. You mentioned Bateman, Tim. The Ravens have drawn 3 defensive pass interferences all season, and Bateman's drawn every single one of them, which is an interesting stat. But, yeah, I was just very impressed. I mean, the throw to Watkins especially was impressive because he was under siege all day. The Bears clearly watched what the Dolphins did responded with the blitz. According to Jameson Hensley, Huntley was blitzed on 28 of 44 of his dropbacks, which is 64% of his dropbacks, which is the highest blitz percentage any team's thrown this year. So this is going to be a trend. We saw against Miami. You know, he was sacked 6 times. But that being said, on the biggest play of the game, he feels the pressure. He rolls right and he just lofts a beautiful ball to Sammy Watkins, who I think, you know, he's had his ups and downs this year, but he's had also 2 of their probably biggest catches of the year. So great signing as far as I'm concerned. But that whole drive was just great. He found Duvernay up the sideline on a kind of busted play for 20 yards. You get the DPI. It was just very methodical and very stunningly quick. You know, the Bears take the lead, I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting much. It was such a struggle all day to get to 9 points with 3:41 to go, and then you get the ball back down a touchdown with 1:41 to go, and they made it look kind of, you don't want to say easy, but like, because that was a 3rd-and-12 conversion on that Watkins play, but kind of easy. Like, he looked like a veteran. He looked like a pro, like, with many years of reps. And especially to do it on such short notice. Like, you mentioned Lamar's illness, Tim. They thought it was, like, clearing up. Lamar practiced Friday, and it seemed like he was going to go. And then they basically said just all his symptoms returned on Saturday. So not sure what was going on there, why Friday he was good, and then suddenly, I mean, he did not look well, the videos they showed of him walking off the team bus. So Huntley apparently got the call he was going to start Sunday morning. So to kind of step in that short a notice and perform how he did, I thought it was very admirable.
One thing we cannot forget of the situation that he was put in, this was not a strong roster whose superstar quarterback was out and they needed the backup to fill in. This was a roster that's been depleted all season. This was a quarterback who was single-handedly, basically, leading this team to wins, and that's the player you have go out on Sunday morning, let's say, and then Tyler Huntley has to step into that and try to win a game. Did not get a ton of help from his running backs, got very little help from his offensive line, specifically his 2 tackles, who seemingly were beat on every single play, on all those blitzes that you mentioned. And yet he was still able to make just enough plays to keep the Ravens in it, to tack on field goals when they needed them, and then to have that unbelievable drive, which, you're right, Jace, they almost did it too quickly by leaving, you know, all of 22 seconds left on the clock. He did, however, get help from Sammy Watkins, as you mentioned. Jace, a nice bounce-back game for him. Mark Andrews, this was a big moment for him. No Hollywood Brown in this game. You want to be the guy, you have to step up in these type of games when the number one receiver is out and when the quarterback is out, and I think he did. Had the unbelievable one-handed catch in the first half, which, like, the tip-it-to-yourself kind of play, and then led the team, I believe, in both receptions and receiving yards. So a solid game from Mark Andrews. Guys, what else did you like offensively.
Well, I think, yeah, with Mark Andrews, you have to be that guy for a backup. You know, Mark Andrews is a big target. Tyler Huntley, not the most accurate guy. I mean, you mentioned the one-handed grab. He made a couple sliding catches as well that, you know, you have to have this radius for this guy. It's his first NFL start on 2 hours' notice. You have to come up big, not even in the, you know, we talk about the Mark Andrews big game narrative thing that we do over on Pod Like a Raven. If you're just listening, I'll fill you in a little bit. He sucks in big games, and he needs to show up. And he has started to do that more and more and more. And today was a big game in a different way because he had to be the safety blanket. It looked like Mark Andrews in the early Lamar days where everything was coming to him. First read was Mark Andrews. If it wasn't there, well, I guess we're just throwing it out of bounds, basically, is what it seemed like a lot of the time. And Andrews stepped up. I do want to give a shout-out, too. I think Devontae Freeman played relatively well. 16 carries, 49 yards. And for a guy who, I wouldn't say he's a shifty back, but definitely likes to, you know, move laterally a lot of the time. He was starting to get north and south a little bit more. Had some great plays. Obviously, the touchdown as well, which was huge. And, I mean, look, the only other thing that I really enjoyed on offense was they gave it to Pat Ricard on a third or I think it was a fourth down and short, and Big Patty Pancake absolutely mullered some Bears defenders. He was hit in the backfield and said, yeah, no, I don't think so. Chopped the feet, kept moving for an extra 2-3 yards. Give Project Pat the ball more and more and more and more, please.
Yeah, just to touch on Andrews briefly, especially that first catch you mentioned, Antonio, the tip, like that was his first catch of the game. And I feel like Tim mentioned the big game thing with him. It definitely seems like if Andrews catches the first one, he's going to have an awesome game. But like, you just have these games, he'll drop one early and then you're like, oh no. And he won't. But he makes that just absolutely spectacular catch. He had that really nice catch. More the effort where he catches it and kind of lunges for the first down with a great reach and stays up. And that was a nice third down conversion too, late in the game. But the only other thing, I guess, offensively I want to touch on, just back to Huntley, just mentioned, is kind of speaking to his poise throughout the whole game, not just on the final drive. He was picked off, but it was a spectacular play, I thought. I was just very impressed, like, even though he was under siege, he didn't really force anything. And especially in the face of this blitz, you know, we complained on this program in the wake of that Miami disaster about how, you know, at times Lamar can try to make a play, just every play is never dead to him. But I felt like Huntley did a kind of a good job of, like, when all was lost, just kind of tucking it and taking the sack, or just kind of, you know, quick reads, just quick hits. And that's, I think, a credit to Greg Roman too. It seemed like, just on the whole, even though he was sacked a lot, like, I felt like the offense flowed a little better and responded to the blitz a little better, certainly, than they did in Miami. And Jeff Cerevic pointed this out, and I'll be honest, I didn't really think about it while watching the game, and I think that's a good thing. No delay of game issues with your backup quarterback. No real getting to the line super late. It seemed like a point of emphasis, and it just felt like they were just more prepared, even with a backup quarterback, than certainly they were for that Miami game.
Jace, that's such a good... They're both good points. I want to talk about the checkdowns that he did. Devonta Freeman had 6 catches in this game on 6 targets. He looked to him whenever he didn't see, you know, things downfield, whenever the pressure was coming, he looked to dump it off. And earlier in the game, maybe halfway through the game roughly, Tony Romo, they did a highlight or a replay of one of the downs, and Tony Romo said, now Huntley, you know, he's the backup. So there was a guy open downfield for a second, but he didn't try to hit him. He waited too long, and then he took the check down to Freeman. But he did it 5 or 6 times, and then on the last drive, Freeman goes out into the flat, and the Bears defender, whoever it is, just runs to try to, you know, take that out, and that's when he hits Devin Duvernay down the sidelines on like a out-and-up move, and he was open, and he hit him, and it was a 20-yard completion where he was able to get out of bounds. And that's the evolution that you like to see of a backup quarterback in-game. So just, you know, even with maybe the stats not being so gaudy, just you got to give him like an A-minus grade based on this performance and the situation that he was in. Defensively, meanwhile, boy, another, just the Ravens defense defenses again, as they have done in several games this year. The first drive for the Bears with Justin Fields looking pretty strong, moving the ball downfield, converting some first downs. And then in classic Bears fashion, Cairo Santos misses a 40-yard field goal where he misses the net entirely on a 40-yard field goal at home in the first quarter. And that kind of seemed to deflate. Either the Ravens' defense figured something out, or that deflated the Bears' offense, because they really did not do anything after that moving forward, at least with Justin Fields. Ravens pitch a first-half shutout at 6-0 at the end of the second quarter, and the defense is looking strong. And then on sort of an innocuous sort of stretch play by Justin Fields, he injures his ribs. And who comes in but the Red Rocket, Andy Dalton. Jason and I run to our phones to try to save Tim from what we knew was coming. We yelled at him to turn the TV off. We didn't want him to have to watch Andy Dalton try to lead a comeback against the Ravens yet again. And Andy Dalton immediately brings the Bears back, guys.
This was the most.
Jason and I are going to get into something a little bit later about maybe the biggest play of the game for the Ravens defense. But before that, I turn to you guys and your thoughts on Justin Fields in the first half and then Andy Dalton coming in the second half.
So a couple things, because I don't know when we're going to do this, so let's just do it now. The Andy Dalton thing. One, all right, if you're a new listener to this podcast and you don't know, I went to the game on New Year's Eve against the Bengals that knocked us out of the playoffs. The Andy Dalton Hail Mary. With the wind chill, it felt about negative 10 the entire time. After that game, soul-crushing, heart-ripped-out-of-your-chest moment where the stadium falls silent and you're just screaming expletives all the way to your car because Andy Dalton did it again. This is not the first time he has broken the Ravens' hearts, by the way. This is just the one I was in person for and getting frostbite from. You know, I looked like Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant trying to snuggle up in a bear, basically, because I was so cold the entire time. I then had to drive down to Washington, D.C. to do some celebrating for New Year's Eve. I did not want to celebrate, but my good friend Antonio Barbera, who is with me here, opens the door to my friend Garrett and I, who was also at the game with me, and instead of saying hello, instead of saying Happy New Year, he said the only thing that he should have said, don't worry about it, we have plenty of booze. That he did, we did okay, and the rest is history. But from that point forward, these two know to do not bring this game up to me, ever. It is one of the worst moments of my life, and, you know, some other bad real-life stuff has gone on in my life, and this is up there. It's a top five worst moment of my life, and maybe that's, I am very fortunate, I will say that. But all kidding aside, what happened, we fast forward to Sunday. What you guys both don't know is that I muted the group chat because I was tired of Jace complaining about Lamar Jackson. And I said, please stop, and I hit do not disturb on the Pod Like a Raven, famous Pod Like a Raven group chat. So I missed your text that said, Tim, turn the TV off until later. What I did do, and I was actually watching game with said friend Garrett, who was with me that day, and we continue to complain about Andy Dalton to this day. He comes in, we look at each other and go, oh no. Oh no. I was more scared of him than I was the promising rookie Justin Fields, and it was not even close. And Andy Dalton stinks, but the Ravens fan base is the only fan base that I think is terrified of the Red Rifle or the Red Rocket or whatever the hell he's called nowadays. It doesn't matter because he's irrelevant at this point. But he comes in, and then old Jimmy Nance starts bringing it up every time. And it's not just two of us watching this game. There is a number of people at my apartment watching this game, and I immediately muted the television. And I just said, nope, I will not have it. Until the plays were run, I would unmute it, and then as soon as I heard, well, you know, back when he was in Cincy, would mute it again, just to make sure that I didn't have to go through that pain again. And then, obviously, Andy Dalton does what he does on two separate plays. Thank God Tyler Huntley came back down the field, because I would be on this inaugural episode on Fansided, the one that, you know, we should be celebrating, having a great time. We're all very, very happy to be partnered with them and to expand our audience just a little bit. I would have been a miserable mess because Andy Dalton would have done it again. And just That's all I have on their offense. They're fine. Matt Nagy called a terrible play on fourth down in a Wildcat. Or maybe it was Bill Lazor. Who knows? I'm just going to blame Matt Nagy because I'm sure he had something to do with it. That Bears team has talent on the offensive side. I think Darnell Mooney is a great player. Obviously, Allen Robinson, he wasn't playing on Sunday, but he can be a valuable piece for them. I think David Montgomery's okay. I like Khalil Herbert a lot. Justin Fields clearly has the talent as well, but my Lord, some of the play calling and some of the decision making for that on that side of the football is pretty egregious.
Tim, you muting our like distress signals. That's Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic with the boat going
that's
down
true.
And no way to get information to get help.
I think
it's been unmuted, by the way. I can report it is you guys are back to unmuted. The game is over, so we're okay.
Jace, you see what you did? You see what you
Well, I think I even said in the chat, I think I said I'm more worried about Andy Dalton. It was just the most predictable thing in the world. Tim, very smart call to mute Nance. He went into some deep cuts. Like, I didn't even really, like, I don't think about, I was shocked they didn't show the play. I was sure they were going to have that queued up. Unless I just missed it, I don't remember seeing it. But the Andy Dalton thing was just so predictable. And especially in that moment, when it came in, I mean, two plays, like, it just, like, immediately, I'll push back a little that Andy Dalton stinks. I think he's a competent NFL quarterback. And in this game,
it was a little tongue-in-cheek, I will admit.
And in this game, that concerned me because, yeah, I don't know if it was just Wink versus a rookie QB. I think Justin Fields is talented, but they did not look good. And especially like just even coming out of halftime. So that's when he gets hurt. And then to just two plays and it's all the same issues we've seen from the Ravens this year. It's A, bad coverage, B, bad tackling as Chuck Clark tries an arm tackle, doesn't work, takes out Brandon Stevens in the process, who also was not in seemingly a position to make a great tackle. And they just turned this screen pass into a 60-yard touchdown. It's the eighth play of over 50 yards the Ravens have allowed this season, which is not ideal. It would have been 9, but the play we'll get to in just a moment was a 49-yard TD. but it was just so predictable for Dalton to come in and immediately score. Like, I was just like, yeah, of course. And the only shocking thing to me at the time was I was like, are we going to lose this game 7-6? Because, like, immediately after that, they did nothing. And I agree with Tim. Matt Nagy called a horrible game. I mean, the fourth down debacle where he's going to punt and then, my headset doesn't work. And he's trying to find a headset.
All-time hilarious.
And then
moment.
He runs just an awful Wildcat play. Like, they have a punt block that helps set up the Ravens in a short field that they turn into the field goal to go up. But, like, Dalton did nothing the whole rest of the game. He looked awful out after that first drive until the play we have to get into, I guess, because he did nothing. He had two plays, basically, and then it was almost enough to win this game.
Yeah, so we do have to get into it. it's 7-6 Bears. The Ravens finally, I was going to say get a big drive going, but they really don't. It's just off of the blocked punt that I thought should have been returned for a touchdown, because Jalen Ferguson seemed to almost overrun the ball while trying to block it. He was there so early, seemingly he could have just like picked it up out of the punter's hands and run it in for a touchdown. But I digress. The Ravens kick a field goal, take a 9-7 lead. The Bears finally march down the field after, as Jace mentioned, Andy Dalton had not done a lot in the previous few drives. And then we get to 4th and 11. At the Ravens 49-yard line. And Jace and I are going to slightly disagree on what the Ravens did here. So I'm going to jump in first, and then I'm going to let Jace disagree. And I'm just going to say that the Ravens, so they call an all-out blitz on 4th and 11. That's the Wink Martindale move. And in theory, blitzing against a double move is the best defensive play call you could ever make, because a double move should never have time to develop against an all-out blitz. Second, It makes your corners, who at this point are your eighth and ninth guys, in theory, blitzing, makes your corners only have to cover for like 2 or 3 seconds, as opposed to 6 seconds. However, Jace, if the blitz doesn't get there in time, you're leaving a guy like Chris Westry on an island on the biggest play of the game. So, your thoughts on the blitz call?
I was not happy at the time. I've done some reading. I've looked into it. You know, Harbaugh Antonio had an interesting thing he said sometimes a quick death is better because you're not dead yet. And Jeff Ceramic, obviously athletic reporter for the Ravens, had a kind of a good breakdown, kind of examining both sides of it. And I at least see the argument today that, you know, if you stop them, like, giving up the touchdown isn't the worst thing because the Ravens did get the ball back. If they convert the first down, you know, in theory, Cairo Santos, they could run it down and he could kick a game-winning field goal at the gun. That being said, I was so mad at the time about this play.
Here we go.
And, I wasn't... what Tim had said, what you had said, like, with Tyler Huntley starts this game instead of Lamar Jackson, and you're missing Hollywood Brown, who in our view, I believe we've said on this podcast, the second best Ravens offensive player. You're missing your two best offensive players, and, you know, expectations are low. I kind of was like, this game doesn't really matter. Like, I was very calm for most of the afternoon, honestly, like, compared to how I normally consume the Ravens. And then they have a chance to win. They're up 9-7. They have a 4th-and-11. The Bears are not in field goal range. You just need to get one stop and you win the game. And then you just leave a guy like Chris Westry, who's never started a game in his life but has to now because Anthony Averett suffers kind of a hamstring injury during the week, I believe, was what the report was. And he's just on an island. And then you send a blitz, and the blitz doesn't get home. Not only does it not get home, they also took a penalty in the process. So even if he didn't complete the pass, the Bears would have gotten a first down thanks to a roughing the passer call. But it was just, I just thought it was an awful play call. I may have been calling for certain defensive coordinators' jobs at that moment. In hindsight, a little extreme, but that's just what's so frustrating about this team all year is, I think the defense has improved, like, over the course of the year. Like, I think they're really good for long... Like, they give up 13 points in this game, total. Like, they're giving up 7 all game. They just have these horrific breakdowns at the worst times, and I just thought, for a team that's had so many issues, I thought putting those guys in that situation was setting them up to fail, because, you know, Andy Dalton is not good, but he's competent, and he's a veteran, and he kind of, at the very least, should know what to do in that scenario, and sure enough, he did it perfectly, and gave the Bears the lead, and, you know, it was just a whole, here, I was like, at the moment, it was just like, I was like, I cannot believe this is how they're going to lose this game. It was just so infuriating in the moment, but I see the case, I still don't like the call, but I at least can understand the argument for it now.
I like when we disagree because, one, it's interesting. And, you know, we all, Antonio being the optimist, Jason and I being on the complete opposite end of that spectrum most of the time, we tend to agree more than disagree on this team. And we see it from a realist point of view. Antonio, I see where you're coming from. And, Jace, I'm a little upset you're sitting on the fence because we need to have a conversation about Wink Martindale. That play call was egregious. And I'll tell you why it's egregious. I hear every argument that you're talking about, Antonio, with, well, in theory, if you can get home, well, in theory, you want the ball back, which, you know, Tyler Huntley was starting. So that, I think, is a little bit of a moot point. In theory, there shouldn't be time to pull off a double move. What evidence do we have that the blitz-happy Ravens can actually get after the quarterback? We don't have any. The last 2 years, year and a half, you know, we talk about how much we love Wink. I love the chain. I love the mullet. I love the sunglasses when it clearly he didn't need sunglasses on Sunday. It's all great. And I think Wink is a brilliant mind. I'm shocked that he's still a defensive coordinator. I thought he would have gotten a head coaching job by now. But that is the absolute worst call that they could have made in that moment with Chris Westry on an island. And I know you have to have faith in your guys, but at some point you have to look and say, we don't have the dudes that can get to the quarterback. And there were some guys that played well. I mean, the fact that, and we'll, I'm sure we'll get to them, but like the Patrick Queen had a great game. Tyus Bowser, great game. We'll get those more in detail in just a moment, but they don't have anybody that can get after the pass or the passer. And even when you send all of those guys, they still didn't get after him. They weren't even that close, to be honest, comparatively to how many dudes they sent. So I just think I understand the theory of it, but looking at the talent and looking at your roster and the evidence of what they've shown over the last 2 years or whatever it is now, I had no faith that even if you're sending, you know, we do the joke, send the blitz, that they're not going to get home. And they just don't. They just don't get home. And that's why I think it was the wrong call.
Look, I mean, I agree. We have no pass rush, but I think that's why. That's the reason to blitz is because we aren't good at getting to the quarterback and he doesn't want Dalton to have time in that situation. But it is, you know, down and distance being 11 yards and not, it's not fourth and five, it's fourth and 11. So you would hope that playing a normal, you know, just a regular defense, on average, you'll give up fewer than 11 yards. Yeah. I don't know. It didn't
work. But it worked
out.
It
worked out. If it were to happen again, I think he's going to blitz again. And that's what he's shown as a coordinator. So we'll see. There's no way this can possibly bite the Ravens again later in the season.
Well, I do love the following series, right? It's a different situation, I know. And they're going to play prevent in that situation, obviously. But they blitzed zero. They blitzed zero. At the start, I believe it was Calais Campbell, whoever the defensive lineman was, drops into coverage before deciding, I'll give it a go. Why not? And I'm pretty sure it was John Harbaugh going, hey, Wink, let's do the opposite. And Wink going, oh, you want the opposite? You want the real opposite? I won't send anybody this time. How about that?
Oh, man. Did that play work? I don't think it did either, though. They still were able to complete a 20-yard pass, and the guy was able to get out of bounds. I mean, there's no solutions for this defense. And yet, overall, I think you have to give him a somewhat passing grade. Let's get into Patrick Queen having maybe his best game of the season, Tyus Bowser maybe the best game of his entire career, and an actual turnover, Jace. We talked about this last week. I didn't know who was going to intercept a pass, but you can absolutely cause a fumble, and the Ravens able to recover it. Calais Campbell jumping the ball. Some positive things from this Ravens defense against, to be fair, a fairly futile Bears offense.
Well, that's my concern, I guess, the last 2 weeks, is I feel like on the whole, the Ravens defense has played well aside from the big plays. But yeah, you said Tyus Bowser. He was the guy who forced that fumble that Campbell recovered. And that was kind of in a big moment when it's still a very low-scoring game in the first half. And then he gets the sack to end the game on a very limited rush. You know, we've actually seen not even the game that I won't mention, but a game the Ravens ended up winning, but years before.
Thank you.
Andy Dalton completed a Hail Mary on a tipped ball to AJ Green. so we've seen him do this against the Ravens. So to not even give him a chance to get the Hail Mary off, and then to be, I thought it was really smart to just kind of hold him up until the clock ran out too. That was great. Yeah, I think Bowser easily had his best game, two sacks. And Queen, I mean, his tackle for loss, or at least his tackle for loss, lost several yards, was basically what set the Bears up for the 40-yard field goal. They would have had a closer field goal, but he had an awesome stop where he just read the play, came screaming in. And I think he's played a lot better lately. I don't know if it's just he has less responsibility for the rest of the defense as a whole, but it definitely seems like his play's improved, and that's encouraging. And Bowser, especially, you said, I mean, top to bottom, I think easily his best game ever in a Ravens uniform. I mean, he was all over the place, and that's like what you need. And, you know, kind of goes without saying, you pay him to do this. Marlon Humphrey was awesome. I saw he gave up like two completions for like 12 yards or something on the day. And, he had an awesome game. But, you know, that's what you expect from him. But he's had some up and down, too, so just wanted to give him a shout out as well.
Yeah, with Bowser, too. I mean, you pay the guy, you don't pay him the crazy money. And look, everybody can look at what Judon's doing. And even Yannick Ngakoue has been okay with the Las Vegas Raiders. But Bowser needs to have more of these. You know, I think he's not going to be the premier pass rusher, but he's a solid Jarrett Johnson, set the edge every once in a while, have those type of games type guy. And it's encouraging to see because I think he's a really solid football player. I think he's developed into a solid starter for this Ravens team after, you know, let's admit it, kind of looking like a bust a little bit earlier in his career before they decided to pay him over the likes of Judon and Ngakoue, which, you know, clearly would have been bigger deals, obviously. So really encouraging from him. Let's just hope it keeps up. And you're right. It's been talked about for weeks, and, you know, we say this all the time. Smarter guys than us will talk about it. But Patrick Queen moving to weak side linebacker and putting Josh Bynes in at middle linebacker seems to have worked wonders. So maybe that is his position going forward. And you know what? If that's what it is, that's what it is. And hopefully when the market comes in 5 years, you don't have to pay him nearly as much because it's not as important of a position.
A couple of extra intangible special teams type things that I want to bring up. I already touched on Santos misses a 40-yard field goal on the first drive for them. And then, of course, on our side, Justin Tucker, 3 for 3 on the road at the Windy City and a windy game, and is able to go 3 for 3. I thought Cook, we gave him a little bit of criticism last week. I thought he looked strong on punts, even though, let's call him reserve gunner, Tylan Wallace did his absolute best to give the Bears the best field position possible. First, he's unable to down a punt that bounces in front of him at the 5-yard line, goes into the end zone for a touchback, and then he stops a punt from bouncing back into Bears territory and downs it at the 17-yard line on another punt. And this is these are the little things in life that it's crazy, the impact of not having Miles Boykin, who was another inactive for this game. He's their best gunner, and he was inactive, and that's the difference that a random special teamer can make on a game. So hopefully we can get Boykin back at some point. And then I have one more thing that I want to bring up here, and I'll then turn to you after this. And Tim, it kind of ties into the tweet that you read at the beginning about the Ravens aren't 7-3 because they're just lucky. They have good coaching, they have good mentality, and they have players who know what to do in most cases. I got to talk about Matt Nagy. I am convinced that he absolutely BS'd the headset not working on the 4th-and-1 from midfield. This is my conspiracy theory of the week. The Bears bring the punting unit on on 4th-and-1. They hear the boos. Nagy realizes that this is not a punting situation. This is we need to be going for it. But he can't look bad, so he calls the timeout, and then he starts screaming that his headset isn't working. But he just realized it late that they should be going for it on 4th-and-1. They end up not getting it. That's just pure theater from Nagy to not look bad, in my opinion. And then later in the game, when the Bears take the lead with that 4th-and-11 touchdown, they make the score 13-9. For you math wizards, that's a 4-point lead. They then bring their kicking unit on to make an extra point to make it a 5-point lead, which is nothing relevant to football scores or situations. They realize it late, again, that going for an extra point is useless, so they call their last timeout at this point. They bring their offense back on the field, they try to attempt a 2-point conversion to make it an actual touchdown lead, they fail, and then they start that last drive at their 25-yard line with 22 seconds left and 0 timeouts because they wasted 2 of them with 2 coaching mistakes. They were able to get to midfield without any timeouts. If they have both of those timeouts, I have serious concerns about the Ravens keeping them out of field goal range. So, Nagy, you did it again. Thank you very much for helping the Ravens secure a last-minute win. Anything else, guys, from this Bears game? Any players you want to touch on or disagree or agree with me about my Nagy conspiracy headset theory?
Oh, I mean, 100%. I think that's just the way he mismanaged this game was unbelievable. I think he's a bad coach. His record's actually not quite
You think, Jace? Really go out on a limb there, bud.
His career record's not quite as bad as people think it is. This will be the first season he has a losing record, actually. He's managed 12-4 and 2-8-8 campaigns, but I just don't see it with him. And I worry, you know, you draft Justin Fields and then you have just the competing forces of a guy coaching to save his job versus, you know, a franchise needing to develop a rookie QB. I think that's always a dangerous combination. So I think it'd be, I think the Bears just need a fresh start. But he certainly, for a guy coaching for his job, he did not put on a great performance. Especially given I thought Harbaugh had a pretty great game, all things considered. It was definitely a contrast of head coaching talent, for sure, I'd say, in this one.
Yeah, shout out to, you know, Greg Roman. He's gotten a lot of stick, and obviously it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a spectacular offensive performance by any stretch of the imagination, but it was enough to get the job done. It was some good play calls at the very end of that game. I mentioned Rashad Bateman a little bit. I think that guy's going to be a baller. You know, the veteranness of trying to get those flags already is something that is, you know, you don't want to cheer for people. I mean, it's not even cheating, but it's kind of on that line, but it's something you need to do to win games. So I thought that was great. You know, Roman calling that game for Tyler Huntley on short notice like that, I think, you know, you got to know what you have to take out of the playbook, try and make things easy for him. I thought that was great as well. And then just two more quick shout outs, one a positive, one a negative. Calais Campbell continues to have a great year. And this time he capped it off with an Oscar worthy performance of faking an injury. When he was trying to get off the field with, I think there was 12 or 13 men, Calais couldn't get off the field in time. And man, he went down like he had been shot in the thigh. And it was just, you could put the Oscar music under it, give him the award right now. And then leans into it for a good 5 to 7 minutes. Like, it's not just okay, everybody knows I'm faking it, I can get up now and walk off. He's really taking his time getting off the field. Calais, good guy. He knows he's got to play the act through all the way to the end. I love a guy who's in on a bit. And
Tim, we don't have the team listed him as questionable to return in the middle of that game.
I'm sure they did. Good job, Ravens. Really committing to the bit. That's what we like to see.
We'll see if he's healthy for next week.
Right. Yeah, I think he'll be okay. My only other one is, and this is not an original thought. This is something that I think a lot of people have, and we don't have to debate it. I know we've been running long on this Bears game featuring Tyler Huntley anyway. I think I'm officially out on Tony Romo. I think Tony Romo came in. I think everybody was super excited about Tony Romo. He brought an excitement. He was caught predicting plays and stuff, which I think is really interesting. As somebody who likes to get nerdy about football, I enjoyed listening to him dissect things at like pre-snap and seeing how that stuff happened. I thought that was really interesting. I don't know if the Corona sponsorship came with a lifetime supply of Corona Lights that he can drink before, during, and after games, and continually throughout the week leading up to games while doing research. I don't know, Jim, is getting a little tiresome. And then he's making jokes about his sister that's like pretending to be in the crowd. He's doing like this really weird deep voice to make a joke about something. It's just a lot of dad jokes, and I'm just tired of it from Tony Romo. He's not Dan Dierdorf levels, for those of you who've been listening to the Pod Like a Raven for a while now. He's not Dan Fouts levels, I should say, for those of you, because Dierdorf was already gone. I mixed the two up because they're both just so horrible. Definitely not Dan Fouts levels yet in terms of commentators that annoy Tim, which, you know, frankly, there are many of them. I will wholeheartedly admit that. But Tony Romo, maybe just get back to like predicting plays and stuff. Stop trying to be goofy Tony, or, you know, maybe go sober Tony. That might work for you.
He's definitely wearing on me a little more too, I will say. He certainly, I was all in when he came in, but yeah, these days I'd rather just, you know, your Charles Davises and even like, I feel like your Greg Olsons, your Mark Sanchez's, I found them interesting on some calls. Aqib Talib, give me him. He's awesome. Romo can just be a lot, especially for in a broadcast where for 55 minutes of this game, not much was actually happening.
And he sort of got caught not knowing something. He tends to be very good with the rules and understanding quarterback play. And he missed the Ravens substituting under 2 minutes before the first half ended, and the Bears not being able to substitute in time, and that not being a rule where you have to give the defense time to match your substitution. And he had Gene Steratore just
Can we bring Gene in here? Gene's here. Hey, Gene, what's up?
Gene was so happy to be like, well, actually, Tony.
Actually, yeah. Maybe the one of the first well actuallys that he's had on Romo in quite a while. All right, we're going to move past this game. The Ravens somehow win, somehow 7-3. Looking at the rest of the NFL, we're going to turn to the AFC North, where all the Ravens' rivals had sort of interesting games. The Steelers down 27-10 in the Sunday night feature to the Los Angeles Chargers, mount an unbelievable fourth quarter comeback and then blow the game late, and the Chargers win that by a final score of 41-37. The Browns, I'm going to put escape versus the Lions, because my goodness, 13-10 winners with Baker Mayfield going up against, I don't even know his first name, Tim Boyle. Not Todd Boyle, Tim Boyle, who I didn't know who that was before the season started. The Browns hang on in that game at home, and the Bengals rebound after their bye with a big win against the Las Vegas Raiders. The final score is 32-13, but this game was a lot like the Ravens versus the Bengals, where this was, I think it was like a three-point game in the fourth quarter and ended up being 32-13 for the Bengals. What do you guys make of the performances from the rest of the AFC
North? I was so distraught that the Steelers were going to win this game. It just had all the makings. We've talked about this on this program. To any new people listening, I'm sure you are familiar with the Pittsburgh Steelers' propensity to just absolutely pull games from the rear end that they have no business winning, to just keep the pressure on the Ravens or to stay annoyingly ahead of the Ravens in the standings. And this had all the makings of this game, and especially given their opponent, you know, it's the Chargers. What franchise has wasted more talent or blown more games in just absolutely agonizing ways than the Chargers over the years? You're in LA, which means it's basically a Steelers home game, at least 60 to not, I believe Al Michaels said 60%. He was his estimate, Steelers fans. I'd guess even more based on the amount of black and gold you saw in the stands. But I was just so mad, and especially the way the Steelers got back into this game. It was like a blocked punt, and then Herbert threw a horrible interception, and the Steelers converted both of those into short touchdowns. Like, the Chargers wildly outgained the Steelers in yards in this game. It's 533-300. Herbert was awesome, aside from his one nearly back-breaking interception late in the game. And the Steelers take the lead with, you know, 3:24 to go. They go up 37-34, and I was just like, oh my god, I cannot believe the Chargers did this. And then Justin Herbert hits Mike Williams, makes an awesome play, runs down the sideline, and the Chargers pull it out. I was pleasantly surprised. It was one of those games that it was, you know, I wanted the Steelers to lose, but, like, the Chargers winning also doesn't really help the Ravens in the broader, you know, making the playoffs picture, because we're going to be competing one way or the other with all these teams. But the Steelers losing definitely helps more than the Chargers winning, or Steelers losing helps more than the Chargers winning, so... I was pleasantly surprised, and especially considering, as you said, Antonio, the other two AFC North teams pulled it out, not convincingly, but still to just get wins and stay on the Ravens' heels. At least one of their rivals lost, and it looked like you know, the Steelers nearly won a game that they should have lost convincingly. So I was glad the Chargers pulled it out, but yeah, it was a wild one. You don't see scores that high very often, especially Steelers score 37 points again, all of 300 yards. It's kind of the same old story with them. They have the same offensive problems just game after game, and Justin Herbert rocks, and then the Chargers being the Chargers kicked in the fourth quarter there when they were outscored in the final frame by 27 to 14, but they still managed to hold on to get the victory.
Yeah, I mean, we got to talk about Cleveland, right?
Do
the,
we?
The fighting. We'll get, and we'll do more of this in detail when we preview the game coming up here later in the program. So we don't have to completely talk about everything that happened with this Cleveland Browns team. And I know it took the Ravens a record-setting field goal to beat the fighting Dan Campbells and the Detroit Lions. I understand. But we also do not have a quarterback whose wife feels the need to go on social media after games and say things like this. No one better say anything bad about Baker Mayfield after this game. I don't think I've seen toughness like this in a while. Maybe the rest of our team should take a hint and get tougher.
Is that why your daily
update into the Cleveland drama that has happened? And who knew that Cleveland, that city, could be the perfect place for a soap opera? But apparently it is. Baker Mayfield, I get it. He's banged up, right? He's suffering injuries. I watched that man sail so many balls that a bum shoulder doesn't fix anyway. He had some terrible passes in this game. I think it was one or two interceptions, at least one, that he just overthrows his receiver by about a mile. And then, you know, the safety who's covering in the back is able to pick it off. Nick Chubb looks fine. I hate that I love Nick Chubb, especially when he's not wearing gloves. But it's just, what do you do if you're a Cleveland fan? And maybe we could do this a little bit later as well. But I just, the question is there. You're getting to the point where you have to pay this guy. And there's excuses. But when you have stuff like this, quote, maybe the rest of our team should take the hint and get tougher. What happens to Baker when he goes in on Monday to break down film? You know, what do the guys say in the locker room about that? It can't be good, right?
Well, Tim, I was going to say, I didn't know there were comments on social media, because perhaps this is Baker had some fires to put out, and that's why he declined to talk to the media after this game like a petulant child and stormed out of the did not show up for his media availability that he was you're supposed to as an NFL player, at least be made available. So that's not a great look, that tweet, and also not speaking to the media after this game. I don't know what to make of the Browns. This should have been a game they won handily. I mean, even as bad as Baker was, and he was terrible once again, but you're up 13-0 on the Tim Boyle-led Lions, and Antonio, there's no reason to know who Tim Boyle was. He was Aaron Rodgers' backup for a few years. And Roger Sherman of The Ringer pointed this out. Boyle, one of the worst college quarterbacks of recent times to have ever made the NFL. He finished with significantly more interceptions in college, playing at first UConn for Bob Diaco, and then he transferred to Eastern Kentucky and was still bad there at the FCS level. It's inexplicable why he's in the NFL. And he had all of 77 yards and 2 picks and 2 awful interceptions. And yet, the Browns don't score in the second half. And it doesn't make any sense, because Nick Chubb finishes with 22 carries for 130 yards. You would think you're up 13-0 at halftime against Tim Boyle, who finishes with 77 yards. You think your game plan should just be, hey, let's just give Nick Chubb the ball every single play and we'll probably win this game. And you know, Baker throws a horrible pick in the second half that makes this game way more in doubt than it should have been. It's just very confusing. Like, they're the best running team in the NFL, and yet the Browns don't seem to be able to like fully put games away. And I think it circles back to just Baker Mayfield. He just misses throws, and I know he's hurt, but at a certain point, and we can talk more in the preview, but at what point does a Baker that has a lot of, he does have a lot of injuries, but like, is he good enough with that many injuries? Like, I'd rather just have Case Keenum. Case Keenum's a good backup in this league. I feel like that's just if Baker's this hurt, play Case Keenum. And I don't know why the Browns are so hesitant to do that.
Yeah, Mayfield getting close to a situation where they just don't extend him and just let him play the last year of the contract next year and try to have the rebound year and then go from there.
I think you're there already. I honestly think you're there already. I really
would I love to have another season of the Browns where that's just a constant distraction every single week about whether or not they're going to extend him or let him walk. We're going to talk about the Browns some more, so I'm going to move past them and I'm going to go to the rest of the NFL. I have a couple of points here, and then you guys, whatever your favorite game was, whatever was most interesting to you, please bring it up. But I'm officially terrified of the Chiefs again. It was a good run. They were mediocre for a couple of weeks there, and now they're just scoring a lot, and they got the mojo, and Patrick Mahomes is smiling and running all over the field. And I'm not on TikTok, but I'm going to assume there's fewer TikToks from his brother that are just obnoxious. So good things coming out of Kansas City. Indianapolis absolutely stomps the Buffalo Bills, who are looking more and more mediocre as the season progresses. They look like they were going to be the number one seed for a little bit. They look like they had an MVP candidate in their starting quarterback, Josh Allen. And they have no interest in taking care of the football whatsoever. Interceptions, fumbles. They had a kick returner trip over his own feet and then fumble. I don't know if I've seen that before, so just good job by you, Bills. But Indianapolis becoming the latest it team after a few victories, and also becoming the latest it team because the Tennessee Titans, who were the previous it team, of course lose at home to the Houston Texans when they were 10.5-point favorites in a game where Tyrod Taylor for the Texans had 107 passing yards, where the Texans averaged 2.2 yards per carry, and the Titans still lose, and were losing the entire game, mostly with the help of Ryan Tannehill's 4 interceptions and the Titans' 5 overall turnovers. Guys, what from the NFL this week grabbed your attention?
This was predictable. Not predictable, because I certainly didn't see this coming, but we talked about the Titans are going to have a letdown without Derrick Henry. The Titans are going to have a letdown with Derrick Henry. But they managed to rip off 5 straight wins all over playoff teams from last year. And we said, wow, the Titans might be the best. And then they lose to the Texans, who might have been the worst team in the NFL entering this week. And you said, I think they have real problems. They can't run the ball, really. Certainly well without Henry in there for his, requisite 30 carries a game. Adrian Peterson, 40 yards on 9 carries. They just crack 100 as a team. And this game is just so weird. The Titans got down. The Texans did nothing in the second half. They went on 4 consecutive 3 and outs at one point in the second half. Between those 3 and outs, the Titans managed to do a turnover on downs, interception, did score a touchdown, and then another interception. So that's how you don't get back in a game when a very bad team is begging you to get back in the game. Otherwise, yeah, Jonathan Taylor might be making an MVP push this year where there's not really clear-cut MVPs. 5 touchdowns, 185 yards. That'll get it done against most teams. Tied into this, you didn't mention them, so we kind of have to. With that loss to a Colts team, I do think is improving, certainly compared to where they were when the Ravens played them. The Patriots are in first place in the AFC East after Buffalo loses this game. New England, 5 straight wins, a 25-0 shutout of the Atlanta Falcons on Thursday night. The Patriots are in first place in the AFC East again. They're somehow in the driver's seat to win that division. I hate it. I hate it so much. The Chiefs, I think, are probably somehow going to win the AFC West and probably win the AFC again because their defense that went from worst in the NFL has been like a top 5 unit the last month. And that's terrifying. Chris Jones had 3.5 sacks of Dak Prescott in that game on Sunday. 19-9, certainly not the fireworks we expected when Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott faced off. But I think that was pretty impressive performance for a Cowboys team that had been rolling offensively.
Yeah, we have to stop hyping up the biggest games because they always turn out to be stinkers, I feel like. And the statistics might not prove that to be true, but it always just kind of seems to be the same thing. You guys have covered the AFC in detail. I agree with pretty much everything you said. So I'll just go to 2 games in the NFC. Packers-Vikings was awesome. You know, Darnell Savage, former Maryland grad, like the three of us, or former Maryland student, I should say, had the game in his hands, and it was ruled an incomplete pass. And Kirk Cousins, credit to him, did what Kirk Cousins sometimes does, and was show up in a big moment. It's rare, but he did. 24 of 35, 341 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Aaron Rodgers throws 4 touchdowns and still can't get the job done. And then Justin Jefferson is already, I think, probably a top 7 receiver in this league. He was 8 catches, 169 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Just doing the gritty over everybody. Big win for the Vikings. The Vikings sit at 5-5 now, and they are probably the best 5-5 team in the NFL, and maybe of all time at this point. They are a very good team, very talented. Even with, as we talked about many a time on this podcast, Mike Zimmer seeming like, you know, he just wants to die rather than be the Vikings head coach.
Well, so that game, Tim, I'm glad you mentioned it, just because this is a very fascinating stat from Nate Davis, one of my colleagues at USA Today Sports. Over the past 3 weeks, division-leading NFL teams have lost 11 games to opponents who didn't have a winning record. This is the year of parity. As you mentioned, you know, the Vikings, a team that stumbled out of the gate, back to 500. The Texans beating the Titans for no reason. This is one of the most shocking years I can remember. And that certainly, you know, we'll talk about more when the Ravens play the Browns. This is the beginning of the hard stretch. But to be 7-3 in this year where every team is basically beatable is very good news for the Ravens.
Yeah, and then real quickly too, just to wrap on this, credit to Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is playing like an actual starting NFL quarterback in this league. You know, they beat Trevor Siemian and the Saints, and it's Trevor Siemian, so, you know, take it for what it's worth. But they beat the brakes off the Saints, 40-29. Nick Sirianni might know what he's doing, and Hurts, you know, he might be the guy for them in Philadelphia, which would be encouraging to see.
All right, with that, before we get to our Ravens versus Browns preview, we're going to do the random Raven, which for the new listeners this week, every episode, the three of us, well, I should say two of us, try to guess a random dude who the other co-host has selected. We offer a couple of clues and then repeat the clues and answer the random Raven trivia question at the end of the episode. I wouldn't say we try to stump our two co-hosts when we do this, but we try to make it a challenge. Some legendary random Ravens we've already covered. BJ Sams, Jim Leonard, Clarence Moore. Oh, that was a good one. Deion Sanders, Corey Graham, Haruki Nakamura. A lot of random dudes. And I am up this week with the random Raven. And I am not going to say it's easy, but it is, and this is my first clue. This random Raven is currently an active NFL player, which is very unusual for us. I think we tend to do former dudes. But this random Raven is currently on an NFL roster. He played for the Ravens for 3 seasons from 2014 to 2016. After bouncing around the league his first 2 seasons, after being drafted in the 7th round by the Green Bay Packers in 2011. The Ravens claimed this defensive lineman off waivers early in the 2014 season, and he would end up recording 74 tackles and 5.5 sacks over his 43 games with the team. After playing with the Ravens, this player signed a 4-year, $20 million deal to play for the dreaded New England Patriots and has started 71 games for them since. This past offseason, he signed another 4-year extension, this time for $11.5 million with the Patriots. Who is this random defensive lineman? And I'll repeat those clues at the end of the episode. I can't give too much because he's an active player. So there's not a lot there.
I think I have him if he's still on the Patriots.
Just a classic New England. I don't want to say steal, but a classic New England signing. The Patriots
have Matt Judon.
The Patriots have a shocking number of guys who have just been on their team for like 9 seasons, and you're like, what?
I saw all those years, and I was like, what is this guy, like 35 years old? He's 31. still just 31, seemingly, after all of that. But yeah, I was, dare I say, shocked by the number of games that he started for the Patriots. That he started 71 games for the Patriots. I did not realize that for this random Raven, who I will answer at the end of the episode. But for now, it is time to preview. Ravens hosting the Cleveland Browns at the bank. Ravens are 4.5-point favorites in this one. And my first point that I need to discuss in this preview is that I have no idea. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if Lamar Jackson is going to play. I don't know if Hollywood's going to be healthy. I don't know which Browns team is going to show up. The one that can score points and is good defensively, or the one that is seemingly in a 10-7 game the past few weeks. But we're going to start with the Ravens offense going up against the Browns defense. And obviously the issue is, can the Ravens get healthy? But assuming that we at least get Lamar Jackson for this game, can the Ravens offensively establish any sort of offensive rhythm? They have scored an opening drive touchdown once all season, and it was in their best game, which was their blowout win against the Chargers. Now, this is a team whose basically their entire identity is, was, should be getting a lead early and then dictating from there with their power run game. Jackson hasn't played in two-plus weeks. Do I think he's going to come out sharp in the first quarter of this game? No, I do not. And yet, that is the challenge for this Ravens offense. What do you guys think Lamar and the offense can do in this game?
It's so hard, like you said, just because we were so optimistic going to the Bears game. We were like, it was a bad Monday night, but we have 10 days to prepare, and our starting quarterback's out with a mystery illness that isn't the flu and isn't COVID, but no one knows what it is, and it sounds very serious. You know, according to ESPN, they said it was congestion in his lungs. That's not good. So a big question mark with him. I agree with you. I think he plays. I do not think he will be sharp out of the gate. Big concern, you know, Robert Quinn had 3 sacks against the Ravens, and you mentioned their tackles were under siege. Well, no offense to Robert Quinn, a very good player for a long time in this league. Myles Garrett's way better than Robert Quinn at this point. Garrett leads the NFL in sacks with 13, and he could get 5 in this game, the way the Ravens offensive line has been playing, if they don't, you know, have a plan for him. I do think Nick Boyle back will help. He will almost certainly almost be exclusively trying to chip and help on Myles Garrett, with probably Alejandro Villanueva, unless, you know, they can move Garrett around. But I imagine Boyle will be following Myles Garrett to try to help in that sense. So it's good to have him back in that way. I am with you, though. I am not expecting a ton of success for this Ravens offense. It is hard to tell because the Browns defense is just so inconsistent. Like they're good. Their rankings are good. They're 8th against the pass, 7th against the run. But some teams have really like put points on them. Obviously, the Patriots scored 45 points just 2 weeks ago against them. The Chargers put up 47 against the Browns. So this team can be exploited, but I just have concerns that, you know, Myles Garrett's the best player on the Browns, and he's going up against what might be the worst unit on the Ravens, and that concerns me. So I think rhythm will be poor. I think it's going to be grinded out, I'm just not super optimistic. And as we've said, the last 2 weeks, people have been blitzing like crazy. Kevin Stefanski is a smart coach. I'm sure they've seen the blitz stuff, so I'm sure they'll be bringing pressure. But the scary thing with the Browns is because of Garrett and Clowney, they don't need to, really. Yeah, Myles Garrett's good enough to just get to your quarterback. So he's my number one concern, and I think he's gonna make for a long night on offense, I think.
Yeah, I mean, on that side of the football, it starts and ends with Myles Garrett, and I think you're spot on with Boyle. I think that they're going to bring him in. They might even bring in extra tackles, and just we're going heavy pass pro, and let's hope Hollywood, if he plays, Bateman, Mark Andrews can get open, things like that. I think establishing the run will be very, very important. You know, the Browns are very good at stopping the run. They only give up about 100 yards per game rushing rushing in terms of defense. Yeah, they rank, if I can do the quick math here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Thanks, ESPN, for not putting numbers there. 7th in the league in yards per game in terms of rushing, giving up just over 100 yards. I think it's important to try and establish that, even though we know Lamar can kind of air it out. And again, as you said, we're assuming he can play. But Myles Garrett could win this game by himself, I think. I think if Myles Garrett, who is quick enough to catch Lamar, is an absolute freak of an athlete. If Villanueva and or Mekari don't have probably their best performances of the season against him, it could be a long day in terms of establishing rhythm for this Ravens offense.
On the other side of the ball, I think all three of us will agree that the X factor is not Baker Mayfield, but Nick Chubb. Can the Ravens, who have struggled against big, powerful running backs, who have struggled to tackle over large swaths of this season, can they do enough not to stop Nick Chubb? He's going to do some stuff. He's going to break some runs. Can they do enough to contain him? And can they eliminate Jace? This might be, I'll have Tim answer first, but this question's really for you. Can the defense eliminate the 50-yard plays, which they have struggled also to do all season? And then really my biggest concern is, can they cover the Browns' tight ends? The Ravens' defense has struggled really against good tight ends. They gave up 100 yards receiving to Travis Kelce in week 2. They gave up 100 yards and like 87 catches to Darren Waller in week 1. They even struggled against CJ Uzoma of the Bengals. He had 2 touchdowns and broke tackles. The Browns' tight ends, meanwhile, have 65 combined catches in the season. So I really see Njoku and Austin Hooper providing problems, let's say, in terms of covering and tackling. But let's start first with Nick Chubb. Can they do enough to keep him, I mean, just under 100 yards? That would really be, I think, a win for this Ravens defense.
Absolutely not. Because what's going to happen is Nick Chubb is going to go for 50 one time. You know, I'll answer for Jace before he goes. He is going to break one, and they're going to miscontain somewhere. Somebody's going to miss a tackle. We saw it even with David Montgomery, who got stuffed in the backfield a couple times and still ended up gaining 7 yards. For Chubb, that's about 25, because he's just able to bounce off guys and he's that strong. If Kevin Stefanski gets cute, I think is a massive benefit for the Ravens. He is a good coach. He can call a relatively good game plan. I think if they stick with Chubb and Chubb is good early, again, could be a long day for this Ravens defense. You kind of hope that you see, and I know it's a different unit and injuries and what have you, but for me, I kind of look at the playoff victory over the Titans last season of just focus on Derrick Henry. Just focus on Nick Chubb. And you know what? Let Baker try and beat you. Or let Case Keenum, if it's him, try and beat you. Does that terrify me from a pure fan point of view as somebody who's going to be freezing at that game in the upper deck? Yes, it terrifies me that I might have to come on here the following Monday/Tuesday and discuss a relatively good Baker performance. And I promise you, I will lie through my teeth if he is actually good. And I will say he was not, and he was not the reason they won. But I think that's what you have to do. You throw everything you can at Nick Chubb. You try and stop that, and you keep his yards per carry to anywhere from 2.5 to 4, and you might have a chance.
Yeah, it's just so concerning with him. The Ravens do have a good run defense, we should say.
And the offensive line, too. We should say their offensive line as part of that, because big guys get credit, too. Their offensive line is incredible.
It is. They have a great line, and Chubb's awesome. I mean, we've talked about him being one of the more underrated players in the NFL. So the Ravens have a good run defense. They're actually 2nd in the NFL in defensive rush yards against per game. Now, there's probably a few reasons for that. They're 31st in pass yards against, so I think most teams rightfully are probably trying to exploit that. But I think a big thing to watch certainly this week will be the health of Brandon Williams. I don't think it's a secret that the Ravens' run defense over the last 10 years now has been significantly better when Brandon Williams plays versus when he's out. He was out against the Bears. But it would certainly be great to have him in the middle taking up some space to try to limit Chubb's running lanes. I'm with Tim. I don't know that the Browns get a 50-yard pass, but we've seen Chubb run for 80 yards against this defense on single plays in the past. So if they get a 50-yard play, I think it will be him on the ground. you know, they've had success at limiting him at times in the past. The Browns' offense in general, you know, we talked about it, talking about their game recap a little bit. Wildly inconsistent. So this is the last month, Antonio. The Browns won 17-14 against the Broncos, lost 15-10 to the Steelers, beat the Bengals 41-16, outlier, because then the next week they lost 45-7, and then they won 13-10. So, you know, in the last month, they've scored 17 points, 15, 41, 7, 13. This has not been an offense that is putting a lot of points on the board. Certainly been having trouble turning their yardage output into points. So that's at least encouraging that the Browns haven't been playing well. Baker Mayfield's health, I think, has played a large factor in that. And that's obviously a question mark. I don't know if they pull the cord and go with Case Keenum for this game at a certain point, if his injuries become too untenable. But yeah, Chubb's the concern. He's the focus, and I agree with Tim. I mean, I think if you put all your energy to stopping him, like, we know Jarvis Landry's gonna get some, but without the threat of OBJ there, who Marlon Humphrey had shut down, maybe Marlon just shadows Jarvis Landry the whole game. That's certainly what I hope they do. But Landry's obviously killed them in the past, but just with Baker's health, I'm not super, super worried about the Browns passing game, despite the Ravens' clear issues versus the pass. I do think they've been playing better in general on defense of recently, but the big plays have obviously been the problem. So that'll be, obviously, if they can limit those, that always goes a long way. Football field's not that long. When you give up 50 yards, that ends in a touchdown a lot of times. So yeah, if they could not do that, that would certainly help.
I can't believe I'm saying I hope Anthony Averitt is back for this game. I mean, it's just, I hope Jimmy Smith is healthy for this game. We just, even with Nick, I agree that Nick Chubb is going to be the number one issue in terms of stopping him, but if we have to play whatever it is, 60 snaps defensively with the secondary that we had against the Bears, I have big concerns.
Yeah,
even outside of how the running game goes. The Ravens, in the last four games, last two seasons, against the Browns, have scored 31 points, 25 points, 47 points, and 38 points. I think I switched that chronologically, but they've put up points against the Browns consistently in the Lamar Jackson era, and so because of that, I think this is going to be a very low-scoring affair. I think the Ravens struggle to score in the first quarter, maybe even the second quarter. Because that's what they've shown over the past several weeks, and Lamar Jackson very, very likely is going to be rusty or not even healthy or may not even play. So with that, if we're going to turn now to our gambling section, again, I've been so wrong with them. I'm not going to count my pick last week. The Ravens were 6.5-point favorites, and then Lamar Jackson didn't play in this game, and the line moved to -1. I can't count it. I would not have taken the Ravens at -6.5 if Tyler Huntley was the starting quarterback. So with that, I went 1-1 last week as a caveat. But for this particular game, I have to take the Browns at +4.5. I think it's a classic Ravens win. Don't cover. It's going to be loud. It's a home game. It's prime time. It's Sunday night. That will help. But I just have not seen the Ravens offense consistently put drives together, consistently put points together in enough weeks to where I'm concerned about this game. And I think it ends up being a Justin Tucker field goal that wins this game. So I'm taking the Ravens to win, but I'm picking the Browns at +4.5. My other two picks this week are the New England Patriots, who just came off of a shutout road win against the Atlanta Falcons. They get the Titans this week, and I think they keep rolling. I'm taking New England at -5.5 at home against the Titans. And then I'm just trying to feed off what the NFL has been all season, basically. Whatever team does extremely well one week, then ends up doing terrible the next. The Indianapolis Colts, off of their gigantic win in Buffalo, are now hosting this former Super Bowl champion, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And the Buccaneers are less than a field goal favorite in this game. They're 2.5-point favorites. and I am jumping all over that. Tampa Bay is better than the Colts. Tom Brady is better than Carson Wentz, and I get them at less than a field goal. I'm taking that. So Browns, +4.5. New England, -5.5. And then Tampa Bay at -2.5.
I'll just go real quickly here because I agree with you mostly here. I did win the Chicago bet even with Lamar. I'm going to count it. I lost the Green Bay -2.5 and then lost Dallas. I thought it was a prove-it game for Dallas. And, of course, as I just mentioned earlier in the show, do not hype up these games, these big, 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 big games, because they always end up stinking. This week, Browns +4.5 for everything Antonio said and everything we've talked about. I'm with you on Tampa Bay. Tampa, as we record this, are playing on Monday Night Football against the New York Giants. So maybe this narrative changes. Maybe this line changes if they perform well or poorly against Daniel Jones and company. But I'm with you. Indy's going to be the story. Jonathan Taylor's going to be the story this week. Tampa's a better football team. Like, come on. This is easy, and it's -2.5. It's not even 3.5. It's a field goal. I know it's away from home, but it's Tom Brady in Indianapolis. You know who really hates Indianapolis? Tom Brady. They've had plenty of battles over the years, and that guy just needs to find a little thing to motivate him. That should be enough. Give me Tampa as well. And sort of, I can't quit him again. I'm taking Dallas -7 on Turkey Day at home to Las Vegas. I think the Raiders are reeling. Obviously, a ton of off-the-field issues have happened, and it's shown. And it seems like they are missing some guys. On field, they are missing Henry Ruggs and his deep threat ability. And, you know, obviously for good reason, that man will never play football ever again. But I think Dallas, if they lose this game or it's tight, we're starting to have this conversation about, wow, maybe Dallas isn't this elite team that we thought they were. I think they need to show out. I know it's on a short week, but give me the Cowboys -7.
I'm going with the exact same, the Cowboys for the same reason, Tim. Thanksgiving, crowd always likes that game. I agree. The Raiders are not reeling. Derek Carr had this to say after their loss to the Bengals. I'm fed up. I just want to be a part of the moment it changes. I want that so bad. It shouldn't always end like this crap. That does not seem to me, I'm not an expert on the Raiders, but that does not seem like a team that's in a good place when your quarterback's dropping that quote post-game after a loss to Cincinnati, and now they have to turn around on a short week, travel. You know, you're not home on Thanksgiving. The Cowboys, the last time they were home, beat the Falcons by 40. It just doesn't seem to speak well for the Raiders, and I think they're going to want to have a strong response, the Cowboys, after that game against KC. For our Ravens, I am also taking the Browns +4.5. I do think the Ravens can win this game, certainly. It should be noted it's their first home game in a little while. Just given the schedule, so that's nice to get back in the bank on prime time. We had so many prime time games to start the season, but haven't had one in a while. I don't know what the weather will be. It'll probably starting to get cold in Maryland in November, I'm guessing.
I can report that because I have been looking at it, seeing as I will be attending this game. 37 degrees at kickoff.
That's not warm. That is close to freezing, Tim.
Jace from Los Angeles, unable to comprehend what a 37 degree right. day would be like.
I'll be in shorts, baby. Get out of here. No, I won't be. I'll be freezing.
But yeah, like you all said, I think the Ravens could win. If they do, I think it's a field goal. I think it's another close game. I have concerns with the offense, the defense. Who knows? On a play-by-play, week-to-week basis. So, from a gambling perspective, I cannot in any confidence say you should bet on the Ravens as 4.5-point favorites in this game. I won't be shocked if they cover it, but it just doesn't seem like, a smart play. And then the Falcons, who have been absolutely decimated, something to the effect of 68-3 in the last 2 weeks after climbing back to .500, I'm picking them because they are in a pick'em against the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are a horrible team. And, the Florida job just opened. We have 3 top 10 in college football jobs open. I am almost positive Urban Meyer's thoughts are somewhere that isn't the Jacksonville Jaguars. Even if he won't leave, I don't think he'll pull a Bobby Petrino, let's say, but I still am of the mind that Urban isn't long for the NFL. especially with all these marquee openings in the college ranks. So I don't know. I just can like the Jaguars be considered a pick 'em? I think Matty Ice has to beat the Jags, right? If you don't, you're in trouble. So Falcons in a pick 'em is the final pick of the week.
All right, I like those picks. I have questions with Dallas at -7 just because I don't know who they're throwing the ball to. Amari Cooper will be out for this game. CeeDee Lamb with a concussion, likely to be out considering it's a short week. So I'm just not sure about how many points they're going to be able to score. But otherwise, I like all your other picks. And Jace, that Falcons pick is certainly something. So good luck to you there in a game of...
When we're on this program next week talking about Trevor Lawrence's best game as a pro when he throws for 470 yards or something, I'll hand up it.
All right, last thing for us to do now is go over the random Raven one more time, and I have the clues ready for you guys. This random Raven is currently an active NFL player. He played for the Ravens for 3 seasons from 2014 to 2016. After bouncing around the league in his first few seasons, after being drafted in the 7th round by the Green Bay Packers in 2011, the Ravens claimed this defensive lineman off waivers early in the 2014 season, and he would end up recording 74 tackles and 5.5 sacks over his 43 games with the team. After playing with the Ravens, this player signed a 4-year, $20 million deal to play for the New England Patriots, and has started 71 games for them since. This past offseason, he signed another 4-year deal, this one for $11.5 million with the Patriots. Who is this random Raven?
I have an idea as well, Jace, but you go ahead. You go first, and then I can confirm.
So the name I pulled was Lawrence Guy.
That's who I have as well.
It is Lawrence Guy. That is this week's random Raven. What a pull by Jace and Tim. I wasn't positive he was still active. I remember hearing the name last year. Do not think I'd heard much of it this year. Then I realized this guy has started pretty much every game for them since he's been there and has another 4-year extension with the Patriots. So he will be there at least another few seasons. Lawrence Guy, just a stout,
just a guy,
slightly above average just player, a guy. I guess. Yeah.
There's a shockingly high number of Ravens to Patriots players over the years. It speaks, I think, to the Ravens talent identification process that Belichick's like, oh, that's a good player. It's someone I want. And then they almost always have more success with the Patriots. I don't think we've done this guy as a random Raven, but a guy like John Simon comes to mind. He was definitely on the Ravens at some point.
Don't forget about Sean Wade and Ben Mason, who were both drafted by the Ravens this year and then picked up by the Patriots. Yeah. And I believe neither of them is still on the team.
But yeah, so, Lawrence Guy, I remember him on the Pats, did not know he was still on the Pats, frankly, and had no idea he'd done that much for the Pats. That's fascinating.
That is going to do it for us this week as we approach Thanksgiving. So I just want to say here quickly that I'm thankful for my two co-hosts, Tim Horsey and Jace Evans. I'm thankful for Lamar Jackson and all the wins and all the fun that he has provided to us and the Baltimore Ravens. I'm thankful to FanSided, thrilled to be a part of their podcast network moving forward. And I'm thankful for good football. So if there's nothing else from my two co-hosts here, for Tim Horsey and Jace Evans, I'm Antonio Barbera. Have a lovely Thanksgiving, and we will see you next week.